The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Today on our show, you will hear the first of presumably many Poor Rapport rants. And after that, I'll dig onto the lighter side with Netflix. All this and more on this week's The Poor Rapport. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to an exciting second episode of The Poor Rapport. I am your host, Andrew Poor, and thanks for listening. Now, I'm going to jump right in to the topic I want to talk about today, which is mainly about news articles that are shared on Facebook. Now, I know a lot of people get the news this way now. It became a big thing during the election, and it's kind of crazy to see what comes with this. I can't look at any news article without wanting to read through the comments, because regardless of what the topic is, the comments are going to usually go probably one of two ways. They're going to praise Trump if it's a political article, denounce liberals, it's going to denounce Hillary, Obama, all of that, an article that has nothing to do with any of those people. I was looking for an article about the Secret Service, which recently came to announce that they've already used their yearly allotment of overtime and hours and money in the first 7 months of Trump's presidency, which is kind of ridiculous. And look at the comments you see. People reference Malia going on vacations and President Barack Obama going to Hawaii. But they gotta realize that when the Secret Service protects the president, they're also protecting the president's family. And Donald Trump, being a 70-some-odd-year-old man, has adult children who also happen to run a global real estate and hotel empire. So they're constantly traveling the world, and that Secret Service has to go with them, even if it's just the 2- or 3-person detail that they have. And it's kind of crazy that they'll criticize an article that really has nothing to do with any other political party. They can, it's a yearly number that's set for every president, and then Trump's exceeded that amount. And it's just kind of crazy that they'll bicker, and then they'll complain, and then they'll name call the other people in the comments about the article. And some people will just throw their 2 cents without even having to read the article. And that's just crazy to me. Now, I'll go back into other articles, even ones that aren't political. People will say, like, the most recent episode of Game of Thrones had people sharing news headlines like, spoilers died here, or in the Defenders trailer, like, could you believe that blank happened? And then people will comment and throw things out that have nothing to do with the article. It's just, I feel like we're living in an age where people will read a headline or see a picture and assume what the topic is about without actually even digging into it. And there's people who actually read the article and then will comment and be like, did you even read the article? This is a whole other topic that you're talking about. I don't know. That stuff just kind of baffles me. Is that even, like, you'll see Twitter postings and stuff where they just share something that's a news article and then people will just criticize it one way or the other, will praise it or deny it. It's just, I don't know. It's ridiculous to me. And that's kind of what I wanted to jump in with, because when I was looking at articles to talk about on this episode, I kind of fell down the rabbit hole of comments on articles, regardless of the news provider. If it was, it's just ridiculous. And I almost feel like people should not look at the news on Facebook or on Twitter. They should go to Google. They should look up, like, New York Times. They should look up, like, the Washington Post. Look up news reports, or watch the news on TV. And I know this gets into people who criticize that the mainstream media is against Trump, but this is the news we've had forever. Like, just listen to it, make your own opinions. You don't have to read every article as gospel. Just look at the facts, and if you're not sure, go to a different article and read that, and that's how you get your information. Don't make assumptions based on what you want to believe. Do your research. And that's kind of how I wanted to jump in today. I know it's a little crazy. I'm kind of jumping into a rant here, but it's something that kind of drives me insane when I look at these articles. And now I'm going to have to try and figure out how to even move forward from this topic. I guess I think I'm going to jump into. I know I really don't want to talk about it. It was a kind of a large event that happened in Virginia. Yes. Well, in Virginia, you know, there was a rally to, I think it was protest the removal of a statue. And before I really dig deep into that, I kind of want to get into another topic, which is, should statues, especially the statues that in this case are about the statues of Confederate soldiers, statues of around the Civil War, praising the side of the Confederacy. Now, I'm not... I like history. That's something, if you know about me, you know I can get on topics about past presidents and just history of certain wars, stuff like that. That's something I enjoy. And that's kind of where I differ with people kind of on this current hot topic, which is these Confederate statues. I personally don't think they should be destroyed. I think they should be moved from the public place if it's causing that much of a problem. I watched a video where people literally pulled a statue to the ground, kicked it, and spit on it, which seems a little ridiculous because you're spitting on a statue. And that's just my two cents. And I really think it's ridiculous to have to remove them from a cemetery. I mean, like it or not, there are people who fought for that side that died, and they're buried with by their loved ones in a cemetery, and they... If it's a statue up there, fine. If it's in the middle of a public park, maybe move it, maybe take it down and put it in storage. But the whole thing of these taking these statues down under the cover of nightfall, and it just seems a little ridiculous. Now, I know I'm going to differ from some people on that. They think they should be destroyed because they're celebrating a war that that side lost. And if you look at other countries, other wars, there's still not statues up of the losing side. Which I see that point, and I think that there's kind of a crazy amount of Confederate statues that exist. But at the same time, I think some should stay up. It's still a reminder as much as reading in your history books. And if kids are that are growing up in the South kind of want to see a memorial, and there's still that sort of Southern pride, even though it is about a war that wasn't over the best circumstances. And that kind of digs into the people that were protesting that statue's removal back in, I believe it was Charlottesville. Now, they were protesting, I don't know if it was, I keep hearing different names for it, I cannot remember what they were for. It was essentially a white pride, or a, I'm not going to say white supremacy, even though that's pretty much what it was, but they were celebrating white rights, essentially. And they think they're trying to take their rights back, and that's kind of something that's a little ridiculous. And I found something that kind of sum up my thoughts on it, and I'm gonna kind of read from that here. Now, a common and seemingly reasonable argument for white pride or white nationalism is, why can't I be proud of my culture? Well, you can. Always have been able to. We have Irish pride celebration, we have German drinking festivals, we have Serbian food festivals. Any European culture you can think of has multiple organizations in North America dedicated in taking pride in their heritage, and no one gives them shit for it. But you see, when you start talking white pride, that's not a culture, that's a skin color. There's no white culture, there never was. There is no pan-European culture, never was. Europe is a continent, not a culture or ethnicity. Now, some of you are probably about to go, but wait, black pride. How is that okay? Well, easy. Go find a black person to ask them if their ancestors were slaves. When you find one who says yes, proceed to ask them, what country in Africa were your ancestors from? Do you know what their answer will probably be? I don't know. This is because their culture was taken from them. It was beaten out of them, they were enslaved, Christianized, and then whitewashed. The one unifying feature they have as a people is that history of slavery and that the history of being black. They can't have Liberian pride or Congolese pride or insert African country pride because they have no fucking idea where their ancestors came from, other than the broad region of West Africa. Meanwhile, us white people can often trace our ancestors to specific cities and regions. People can trace their maiden name to a single village in Ireland. I know where I came from. I don't have white culture. I have German culture. So that's why white pride makes you an asshole, but black pride actually makes sense. Now, this isn't my words. I found this point. It really summarized kind of my own personal views on it. Now, I know people still like to be proud of a war that their ancestors fought for, and that they don't want it to disappear, and people compared the removing of these statues to burning books, which I guess history will tell if that's truly the case, but personally I think if these statues go, I don't think we're going to be worse off for it. They still teach Civil War heavily in history. I remember learning about it in middle school and in high school, I believe a little bit too, during U.S. history. It's still taught. It's not like if the statues go, it's going to be forgotten. I don't know, that topic still rubs the wrong way. I've watched the videos, and it's hard not to be angry by what's said. And then to see the comments that came out, and for the most part, a lot of politicians condemn the actions of those that were there. But then Trump kind of flip-flopped. He used phrase that there were issues on many sides, and you can clearly see in some of those videos that people were marching with shields that they've made themselves and weapons. The kids doing the protest had torches, which never really made sense to me. It seems a little ridiculous to have these large tiki torches and kind of parading and chanting. And then you see these militiamen, there was people in KKK regalia, and it just seems a little ridiculous for something that should be, I don't know, I honestly, trying to even put words together on this is kind of exhausting, because there's so much you can want to say, but then we try and get the words out, just because it's frustrating to see that this is 2017, this is the year we're living in when this kind of stuff happens. Now, there's a lot of good things that happen in the world, too. I'm kind of getting off topic, but the one thing that was kind of ridiculous is that Trump said there were people on many sides that were causing the problem. And there was a lot of verbal throw back and forth, but the people who were counter-protesting, I don't think, were the problem. I think they were trying to express their opinion. They did not like that there was these people they called these white supremacists that were there that were protesting the statue's removal, and they were praising white pride, and they were saying slang words. They had Nazi flags. It was just a little ridiculous. And then the tragedy of losing three lives to this event, I don't know. It's just crazy. And then it took Trump like 2 or 3 days to finally condemn the people involved and to name them as Nazi sympathizers and members of the KKK and white supremacists, to only go back a day or two later to his original comment and saying there were people on many sides, that there were good on both sides. I don't know. It's just crazy. And I'm not saying that my opinion should be what's believed. Everyone can have their own opinion. But I think it's crazy that in this year that we're living in, this is starting to become the norm. And we shouldn't be desensitized to what this is. It's ridiculous. And that's really all I really want to say on this, because I could probably rant for 30 minutes or more about this. And frankly, I'm sick of the amount I've talked about this, but I think it should be heard. Now, I need to get on to a nicer topic. And I think one good way to do that is to kind of go back to last week's episode. Or not last week, my first episode for those listening, which I guess was last week by the time I'm recording it. By the time you're hearing it, it will be a little bit later. Now, last week I told you about the fact that Disney had pulled their catalog of movies that they've released from Netflix and were planning to do so, I think, by the end of 2018. Since then, I've learned that it's not all of their properties. All their Marvel movies and the Star Wars movies that have been released are going to stay. I think that's, they're just all of the Marvel and or all the, sorry, all the Disney and Pixar films are what are leaving to go to their new streaming program. They're also doing work with ESPN so they can do their own sports meeting. Just doing that to combat the people who are cutting cable, which I guess makes sense. But in, I'm not going to say in retaliation to that, but in a power move, Netflix stole Shondaland from ABC. And ABC is the television counterpart of Disney. And Shondaland is the TV producing company that has brought TV shows like Grey's Anatomy and How to Get Away with Murder and that other show I can't really think of the name right now. The show with Kerry Washington. I'm sure I'm going to remember it the second I stop recording. But they pulled her away from that show, paying her some unknown amount of money to produce new content for them. Now, this doesn't mean that ABC is going to lose those shows. They just mean they lose any future shows from her, which has got to be a little bit of a blow considering it came a week or two after Disney made this announcement. And then not much longer after that, Netflix made another interesting move in acquiring Millerworld, which is the comic book company of Mark Millar, who has written a number of comics and has actually produced some movies that you probably have seen. His creations were the Kick-Ass characters, which came those two movies, as well as Kingsman, which had one movie that did really well, and a sequel is coming out later this year. And even though that those two sets of characters that he has created are not a part of this transaction, all new content, which is going to include TV shows, movies, and comic books. So there'll be comic books coming to comic book stores around that will have Netflix's logo on it, which will be kind of interesting, and is kind of a interesting medium going from a company that mainly at one point just sold other people's content for a monthly fee to having their own original content, and now they're acquiring companies and putting out books with their name on it. So that'll be kind of interesting to see how that comes across over the next year or so. So that's pretty exciting, and I'm sure Netflix is in the opportunity to do a lot more. Netflix, I'm kind of going to keep sticking with Netflix because it's a lot more lighthearted than my earlier segment. I just completed watching the Marvel miniseries The Defenders, which is the culmination of the four Netflix shows they've been doing on Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, which are all comic book characters under the Marvel umbrella. And this miniseries was kind of the culmination of a lot of those shows. A lot of the groundwork that had been laid on all four shows over the past, I think, 2 or 3 years has led up to this, and they had Sigourney Weaver, and they had the four main characters and all the supporting characters from all of their shows together in one place, and after 8 episodes, it really leaves you wanting more. And I'm going to kind of get into a few spoilers, so I'll give you kind of a little spoiler break. So 3, 2, 1. Okay, so it kind of picked up a minute after, I feel like, Iron Fist ended. So for those of you shouldn't watch the Defenders miniseries without being current on all four Netflix shows. So it kind of picks up with Danny Rand and Colleen Wing in, I can't remember what country that, they had already gone to Kunlun, and they're trying to figure it out. It traces them back that this thing is in New York, where they were just at before Iron Fist took them overseas. So it kind of picks up with that, and then it's interesting because it jumps between all four characters and their respective stories in the first, I think, 2 episodes. It's all of them running through their usual way of doing things before they all end up meeting in the boardroom, where we kind of get introduced to Sigourney Weaver's character of Alexandra. Now, Alexandra is kind of the head of the hand. She's one of the five fingers and is the one in charge. So I would call her the thumb. They have this plan, and they don't really explain what the plan is, but it involved resurrecting Elektra as, what was her name? It was the Black Death or something. She had some crazy name, and they brought her back using some weird old-school magic, and kind of looks like she was came forth from a battle pool of blood is kind of what it reminded me of. But back to the story, they were meeting in this conference room, and we get to see all of them kind of interact together. We get to see all of their respective abilities all coming together, and then it kind of culminates into the hallway, which all of the shows have kind of had their own hallway fight, them all working together and bringing together a kind of the Defenders. They're kind of bringing out that, and it kind of move forwards from there. They meet up a restaurant, whole thing of them not really understanding who each other is. Luke Cage calls Danny a rich white boy who plays justice for fun or something like that, and he doesn't believe he's this immortal Iron Fist that he keeps claiming to be, and Jessica Jones is kind of over this whole thing because she's still dealing with the events of her show, which I think is one of the better of all of the Netflix shows we've seen up to this point. And Daredevil is fighting his own demons, and once he first meets Elektra in the hallway, he kind of loses focus because he wants to believe it's her and she's not her, and it's just, there's a lot of stress in the first few episodes, and it's kind of takes a bit to move forward. Now, you get to see some interesting fights, because Dick shows up and kind of plays the mentor to all of them, tries to get them to unite. Kind of reminds you a lot of the first 20 minutes or so of the Avengers movie, where they're all pulled from their respective places and tried to put together to solve this larger-than-life crisis that not each of them individually can solve. And you kind of run through to try and solve the problem, and it kind of culminates with them tracking down Madame Gao and the rest of the Hand to this underground bunker after Elektra has captured Danny and taken him down to, because only this spot can be opened by an Iron Fist, and then it turns out it's a dragon that they can harvest to give them essentially the life force so that the members of the Hand can live forever. And so they kind of have to, the Defenders show up there and they kind of have to fight their way out, and then they use C4 to detonate the building that's on top of it to try and close this off so the Hand can be no more. And it kind of ends with Daredevil choosing to stay behind to keep Elektra busy so they could escape, and the whole thing collapsed on them, and it kind of leaves you like, where'd everybody like, it leaves you thinking that he's dead, and then it he chose to say to Danny before he left to protect his city. So then it kind of shows them all at the end going back to their own respective worlds. It shows Luke Cage going back to the people he loved. It shows Colleen and Danny together. It shows Jessica Jones hugging her kind of adoptive sister. And then there's Karen and Foggy waiting for Matt to show up. And there's just that door scene, and it really breaks your heart to watch that this has come through, and you just can see it on Karen's face, hoping for them to come back. And it's just, oh, it's a, and then you can see that Danny really listened to what Matt had said, and then you could cut to him on the rooftop and pitch him in like the black of night, and then you just see his fist glow, and it shows that he's ready to take on that mantle that Daredevil had left for him. And then you think it's over, but then you see that Matt Murdock is laying very wounded on a bed in I'm going to say a nunnery. I know that's not actually what they're called. And you see him kind of stirring up, and then one of the nuns says, go get Maggie. And for those of you who are all familiar with any of the Daredevil comics, know that Sister Margaret Maggie is actually Matthew Murdock's mother. So we're going to pick a very interesting place in the next Daredevil season with Matt realizing that his mom is still alive and what that's going to cause for him. And I think that show overall put a lot of the four main characters in places that I think will change all of them for the better. Especially, I think, Iron Fist. Iron Fist was the... It wasn't the most well-received show when it came out. People criticized a lot of the details of it. People were upset that they didn't choose that moment to cast an Asian American person as the Iron Fist, and instead of we're just doing it as showing a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white kid going off to the middle of nowhere Asia, learning kung fu and coming back and showing it's how it's done. And I think the Defender season really grounded that character. I think it's going to put it in a lot better place and may actually turn out to be one of the better Netflix shows when it comes back. And I'm personally looking forward to it. I know the next show that's coming out of this, the Netflix Marvel shows, is The Punisher, which I know is being filmed, and it's had John Bernthal as The Punisher, who was definitely the standout character of Daredevil Season 2, so I'm personally looking forward to that. And then I know we'll have new seasons of all four shows probably some point between beginning of next year and the beginning of the following year. I'm sure they're probably going to air all four probably somewhat quarterly or seasonally. So definitely a lot to look forward there. And I think they could easily do another four seasons of each of those shows and then do another Defender season. I think if they do it as that grouping, because I would gladly could have watched 12 more episodes of just the Defenders. But it just makes me excited for more of their shows coming up. I guess with that, I really don't have a whole lot else to talk about. I kind of ranted for a bit and talked about Netflix for a bit, and I think that's not a bad way to do an episode. You kind of have to go through the heavy in life before you can kind of get to something a little bit nicer and more relaxing, and I apologize for throwing spoilers at you, so you can always listen to the first half of the episode and then come pick me back up later after you've watched The Defenders or after you watch all those shows. And if you have no interest in these shows, then you can just stop there. So I guess with that, thank you for listening with me today, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with more great episodes. You can follow me on Facebook at The Poor Report. You can listen to all the other great podcasts we have at thejourneyintocomics.com, which is the network page. We also have a Patreon going, so I think if you go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/journeyintocomics, you can pay some money to get some of the episodes early, as well as help kind of pay for our rights, and allows us to do more cool things on the network, which I've been lucky to be a part of, and seeing episode 2 come together, and I feel like I found my footing a little bit more this time around. So I want to thank Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone for being very helpful in me getting this off the ground. And I know I plan to have guests, but sometimes with my work schedule and with my personal life, it's hard to kind of coordinate a set time to record this. I know it seems to be weekday nights are kind of when I'm going to do this. So I hope to have guests, and I know those will end up being longer episodes, and I definitely plan to do an in-depth coverage on all the CW shows when they come back. I know they'll be covered on other shows on this network, but I'm a big fan of those shows, and I can't wait to tell you guys about them. So I guess with that, I'm Andrew Poor. This is The Poor Report. Thank you for listening, and have a great week.